would not allow American and Israeli ships through the Strait of Hormuz. How does a former U.S. ambassador to Oman see Iran's efforts to control the strait? It's Morning Edition from NPR News. The economy added about 160,000 jobs each month this spring. Then in June, it slowed to under 60,000, and inflation rose faster than wages. I'm Amy Martinez.
And I'm Leila Fadel. We get the latest figures on the job market this morning. Also, the National Park Service finds President Trump's plans for a giant arch would disrupt the historical significance of dozens of other monuments. And Hannah Waddingham on the new season of Ted Lasso, where women take the field. It's Friday, August 7th. The truth is out there, and it's that David Duchovny turns 66 today. The news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. President Trump has signed two executive orders targeting birthright citizenship and so-called birth tourism. NPR's Juliana Kim reports Trump says the White House is adjusting its approach after what he called an unfortunate Supreme Court ruling.
Trump tried to restrict birthright citizenship last year through an executive order. That one targeted babies born to parents in the U.S. illegally or on temporary visas. The order was quickly challenged in the courts, and this June, the nation's highest court struck it down, reaffirming that birthright citizenship is guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. And it's why some legal experts expect Thursday's executive order to also face legal challenges.
That's NPR's Juliana Kim reporting. The Federal Communications Commission has voted to wipe away limits on how many Americans any one company can reach through the local TV stations it owns. Congress set a limit at 39% of Americans to preserve a range of editorial voices and sensibilities in local TV. NPR's David Folkenflik reports some lawmakers and advocates say the commission's action is unlawful.
FCC Chairman Brendan Carr says the local TV business is under pressure from streaming, and he says local TV companies need to bulk up to fight back networks like ABC and CBS and NBC. Carr has launched investigations of major broadcast networks egged on by President Trump. The vote on limits fell 2-1 along party lines. The lone Democrat on the commission says the vote was illegal, that only Congress can change or erase those limits. But executives at Nexstar hailed the decision. Nexstar owns more TV stations than anyone. Its acquisition of a big rival would let it reach 80% of the nation. But that takeover is on hold as a major antitrust lawsuit plays out. David Folkenflik, NPR News.
Patients and medical researchers are calling on prediction market sites to ban betting on clinical trials. NPR's Bobby Allen reports Kalshi and Polymarket say the markets offer valuable information.
Prediction market sites Kalshi and Polymarket are facing a backlash for allowing bettors to wager money on the outcome of clinical trials. The companies say the betting can keep patients ahead of the latest medical breakthroughs, but Joshua Pedersen sees it differently. His 12-year-old son is a cancer patient in a clinical trial, and he says betting against the trial's success is effectively trying to make money on his sick child.
One of the things that has struck me about these platforms is that they're flashy and they're gamified in such a way that you're often kind of distanced from the real cost.
Drug researchers have started an online petition asking that the platforms ban such markets, but the companies claim they could make the opaque drug discovery process more transparent. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
This is NPR. Britain has approved Paramount's $81 billion takeover of Warner Brothers Discovery. Paramount agreed to protect editorial independence and maintain investment in British programming. The deal would bring CBS, CNN, HBO Max, and Paramount Plus under one corporate owner. The takeover is still facing an antitrust lawsuit from California and 11 other U.S. states. This summer marks the first time in 60 years that no original members of the Grateful Dead are touring. In their place, other musicians are keeping the Dead's music alive. NPR's Isabella Gomez Sarmiento reports.
Graham Lesh was literally born into the Grateful Dead. His dad, Phil Lesh, was the band's bassist. This summer, Graham Lesh has been playing Dead tribute shows across the country. Lesh is one direct inheritor of the Dead's legacy, but he doesn't want to be its solitary keeper. He says the hundreds of Grateful Dead cover bands across the country give him hope for the future.
What we can do is sort of bring all these other musicians in and provide a place for them to be in the band and to take the music and then maybe go out and, you know, spread the good word.
That way, hopefully, the music will never stop. Isabella Gomez Sarmiento, NPR News.
The Labor Department will release its July jobs report this morning. Economists expect hiring to have picked up modestly after employers added just 57,000 jobs in June. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Eric and Wendy Schmidt through the Schmidt Family Foundation, working toward a healthy, resilient, secure world for all. On the web at theschmidt.org. This is NPR.
I'm Heidi Holton, and on KXE, we want to hear from you. We want to hear voices of the people who live here, the people who are listening, observations in nature, commentary on our programming. You can do that easily through SpeakPipe. Go to speakpipe.com/KEXE. KEXE is truly people-powered.
Hey, guys. I'm going to send you a couple more little observations from this week that I thought were pretty cool. One, we see a lot of turkey vultures around here, so that's not unusual.
And I appreciate this effort to move away from the bombast that elections have become. Tip O'Neill said it best, all politics is local. And I so appreciate you, KEXE, for making it so.
Last Sunday, while paddling along the north and east shore of Sand Lake in the Britt area, I noticed about a dozen clumps of yellow irises.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel in Washington, D.C.
And I'm A. Martinez in Culver City, California. Now, we know more today about an agreement between Iran and Oman to reopen the Strait of Hormuz.
In a few minutes, we'll get analysis of the current agreement from a former U.S. diplomat to Oman. But first, some more context on the evolving conversations about the critical shipping route, which goes through the territorial waters of Iran and Oman. Ships have not been able to pass freely since the war began in February, blockaded by Iran and then the U.S.
To discuss what this agreement might entail, we're joined now by reporter Samir Hashmi in Dubai. So what new details do we have based on discussions in Iran's parliament?
Well, the Iran state media shared details of the agreement with Oman on Thursday. According to Iran, the deal bans any American or Israeli vessels passing through the Strait of Hormuz. It will also fine violators with up to 20% of cargo value. And countries and individuals deemed to have caused damage to Iran would be denied passage through the strait and the Persian Gulf until Iran is compensated for war damages. Iran says it will also be responsible for navigation guidance, monitoring vessel traffic, maritime security, and environmental protection. Iran has also denied reports of a disagreement with Oman on toll charges. The fee, according to the draft shared by Iranian media, would be a combination of many variables. And as Iran said earlier this week, this all remains conditional on Washington ending its blockade of Iranian ports. As of now, Oman has still not commented on any of this.
Okay, what about the reaction of other Gulf countries?
There hasn't been any official response on the draft from other Gulf countries yet, but all of them have been pushing for a de-escalation. Even during the course of the war, the UAE, Bahrain, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar were attacked by Iran, and none of the oil producers, the Gulf oil producers, have been able to export oil through the Strait of Hormuz, which is also having a severe impact on their economies. So they are keen to have an agreement in place at the earliest that would allow the Strait of Hormuz to be unblocked. And in the past, the Gulf countries have officially rejected Iran's proposal to manage and control the Strait of Hormuz. They've called it a gross violation of international law and undermining the International Maritime Organization.
Now, in the meantime, though, the Houthi rebels carried out attacks against Saudi Arabia yesterday. Can you share any details on that?
Yes, the attack was carried out inside Saudi Arabia's territory in the southern Najran province on Thursday. It injured 11 civilians, according to the Saudi military. There was no immediate comments from the Houthis, but the Iranian-backed militia has increased attacks against Saudi Arabia in recent weeks, including attacks on Saudi oil vessels in the Red Sea that has disrupted oil supplies from the country. Now, the Houthis and Saudi Arabia, the two were locked in a war for many years that ended in a truce in 2022. But the latest escalation risks unraveling that ceasefire. The Houthis also said that they attacked military camps in central Yemen yesterday, killing dozens of Yemeni government troops, which are backed by Saudi Arabia.
All right, that's Samir Hashmi in Dubai. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
For more on negotiations over the Strait of Hormuz, we turn to Mark Sievers. He served as a U.S. diplomat for more than 30 years, including as U.S. ambassador to Oman from 2016 to 2019. Ambassador, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Great to be on the NPR.
It's so nice to have you. So Oman is not commenting on these talks with Iran. So the only details we know are coming from Iran. Given your expertise, give us your insights into how these talks might be playing out.
It's very interesting because the dialogue between Iran and Oman has been going on since the early days of the war, I think, right, going back to March. The first Omani delegation went to Iran to talk about the Strait of Hormuz. It's interesting as well that the Omanis have not commented on the version of the agreement that's being put out in the Iranian media. But what I can say at this point is, from what everything that I can see, this will not be acceptable to the United States. I don't see how it can be.
Now, what seems interesting is the U.S. seems almost on the sidelines to these negotiations. Would Oman enter negotiations that actually cut the U.S. out entirely?
Well, I'm sure there's a channel for keeping the U.S. informed of the negotiations. Mm-hmm. So, but the actual parties to the talks, as far as I can tell, have been Iran and Oman directly. President Trump has mentioned several times ongoing negotiations with Iran. I don't know how those are taking place. You know, there's a lot of ambiguity about all this. But again, coming back to the substance of it, the United States can't accept at least the version that's been put out in the Iranian media. At least that's my expectation.
Would Oman actually agree to these terms, given that their U.S. ally wouldn't? And that includes the banning of U.S. and Israeli ships passing through the strait until Iran is compensated for war damages and tolls Iran says that they would charge on other ships allowed through.
Again, we need to hear from the Omanis. I think it would be surprising for them to play this according to the Iranian script entirely. There have been other versions put out by Oman previously, including one calling for using a narrow passage that would be neither in Omani nor Iranian territorial waters. But Iran did not accept that. And of course, periodically, Iran has also attacked Oman, not as intensively as some of the other Gulf states, but they've been struck several times, including in the Musandam Peninsula, which borders the Strait of Hormuz. So it's an interesting process.
How much leverage? I mean, the U.S. seems very eager to get out of this war and also seems unable to get out of this war. I mean, who has the leverage here when it comes to negotiations that would benefit each party? I mean, will Iran come out of this with partial control of the Strait of Hormuz?
I don't know. I think you're correct that the U.S. is looking for a way out, but it seems to me a way out that leaves Iran in control of the Strait of Hormuz, or at least a mechanism.
The The National Weather Service in Duluth, Minnesota has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for west central Cass County in north central Minnesota until 7 a.m. Central Daylight Time. At 6:13 a.m. Central Daylight Time, a severe thunderstorm was located near Park Rapids, or 22 miles southwest of Walker, moving east at 30 miles per hour. Expected hazards include quarter-size hail. This is a radar-indicated threat. The following impacts are expected. Damage to vehicles is expected. Locations impacted include Bacchus. For your protection, move to an interior room on the lowest floor of a building. Repeating, a severe thunderstorm warning has been issued until 7 a.m. Central Daylight Time for the following counties in Minnesota, North Cass and South Cass.
They've been brought in again, I think, probably because of the practical aspects of the, you know, the maritime passage being between them and the Iranians. And perhaps the Iranians have more confidence in Oman than they do in the Qataris and the Pakistanis. Oh, I don't really know.
Former U.S. Ambassador to Oman, Mark Sievers, thank you for your time and your insights.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell says he's been discharged from his rehabilitation facility and will continue to recover from home. Here's Kentucky Public Radio's Sylvia Goodman.
In a series of emails, Senator McConnell has provided statements with updates about his health and photos, but these have actually stirred up more speculation and even conspiracy theories about the aging senator's health. In a previous statement, McConnell said that he fell and briefly lost consciousness, landing him in the hospital on June 14th. Then he says he picked up pneumonia during his hospitalization. Now that he's discharged, McConnell said in the most recent statement he will continue an intensive regimen of physical therapy from home. Objections have been severe from McConnell's critics, who say he hasn't been transparent enough with his constituents. Kentucky's Democratic Governor Andy Beshear sent a letter late last month telling him to be straight with Kentuckians or resign. He even criticized McConnell's junior colleague, Senator Rand Paul, for voting to hold Anthony Fauci in contempt of Congress for not answering questions during a hearing on COVID-19.
So 85-year-old Anthony Fauci should be held in contempt in jail for not answering questions to Americans. But 84-year-old Mitch McConnell gets a complete and total pass after not showing up to work for 7 weeks. It's a huge double standard. It's entirely partisan.
That was before McConnell's statement, but Beshear has been adamant that McConnell should address his constituents via video or media interview instead of in writing. Adam Hope is the communications director for the Republican Party of Kentucky. He says the 84-year-old senator has been working actively with his staff and will be able to do that even better now that he's recovering from home.
I feel like the senator has been very forthright with the people of Kentucky. You know, he's released multiple statements, photographs, things of that nature that prove that he's still able to maintain his duties.
At the annual Fancy Farm political picnic this past weekend in western Kentucky, an event he usually makes a point of attending, McConnell was noticeably absent. Republican attendees had mixed feelings about McConnell, who doesn't always vote the way President Trump wants him to. Many said they want to make sure Kentuckians are fully represented in the Senate. Some hoped he'd get better in time to pass the torch. McConnell's term ends in early January after a four-decade-long career, and the race to replace him is well underway. From PR News, I'm Sylvia Goodman in Louisville, Kentucky.
This is NPR News.
Coming up, we've got more news from Morning Edition from National Public Radio. We received support this morning from Oak Hill Assisted Living in Grand Rapids. They provide personalized care in a home setting. More information at oakhillseniors.com. I'm Heidi Holton with Malachi Coons. Thanks and welcome to the Friday Morning Show. We would like to put our thanks out to you as well as business supporters like Paul Bunyan Communications. They're powered by the GigaZone, a broadband cooperative featuring all fiber optic GigaZone internet and Wi-Fi with speeds up to 10 gig with no data caps and no speed throttling. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative. More at paulbunyan.net. Arrowhead Library System is offering acrylic painting kits now through August 31st at its libraries. Kits are designed for ages 13 and up. Watermark Art Center in Bemidji has their event that feature works by Monica Erke that begins today, reception from 5 to 7 o'clock. The exhibit studies the invasive plants of Minnesota in a series of lino-cut prints. Erke will give a demonstration of her work on Saturday, tomorrow at 10 a.m. The 6th Annual Range Iron Pride Festival is tomorrow from 11 to 4 at Iron Trail Motors Event Center in Virginia. The festival includes vendors, food trucks, and entertainment.
Support for NPR comes from this station. And from Fisher Investments. Fisher is committed to helping clients stay on track to reach their financial goals and enjoy a comfortable retirement. FisherInvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss. From the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR produce programming that meets the highest standards of public service in journalism and cultural expression. And from the Andrew Carnegie Foundation, formerly Carnegie Corporation of New York, working to reduce political polarization through support for education, democracy, and peace. More information at carnegie.org. This is NPR.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm A. Martinez.
And I'm Leila Faudel. When I sat down with the actor Hannah Waddingham, she was loving life. Her shows Ted Lasso and Ride or Die are dominating on Apple TV and Amazon Prime Video.
Number one, my friend, number one.
It's a moment.
On both platforms. Let's just call it as it is.
It's awesome. Congratulations.
I'd like to think it's all me. It's absolutely not, but I'm going to dine out on it, even if it lasts for one day.
In Ride or Die, she's a bombshell secret assassin who has to go on the run with her bestie. In Ted Lasso, she's Rebecca Welton, an imposing English soccer club owner figuring out who she is post-divorce. She hires an American football coach who knows nothing about soccer, also football in the UK, hoping he will be a disaster for the AFC Richmond team, which was her ex-husband's prized possession. But she ends up loving the sport and the coach, Ted Lasso, played by Jason Sudeikis. When season four begins, Rebecca is in Kansas City asking Ted to come back to England.
We want you to coach our women's team.
Are you trying to sabotage this team now too or something?
No, quite the opposite. Last time I hired you for all the wrong reasons. This time I absolutely want to hire you for all the right ones.
Immediately, though, Rebecca gets called out for not considering a woman to coach the team, and she questions herself. Am I a feminist?
There's a beautiful scene with Rebecca's mum. She's clearly been indoctrinated from birth by this mother, saying that very much so, in a very passive way and in a playful way, that women are inferior to men.
Yeah.
And Rebecca doesn't notice that. Until she's called out.
But there is a version of that, I think, for all of us, where we realize, we have been raised with these sort of internalized things.
We've been passively indoctrinated generationally that women are less than, for sure. I was myself.
Yeah, same.
But I suppose the sliding doors of myself and Rebecca Welton are that Rebecca doesn't realize until she's the age she is, whereas I realized probably when I was about 15.
You're like, wait a second.
That there was a male dominance in my family and that my mum was also indoctrinated by it, I don't mind saying.
This is a fictional story, But it is playing out a conversation we're having in the real world about the appeal of women's sports. So there are these big questions about, can we make money off a women's team? Is it a drain on the men's team, which we already know is popular? Is this fictional story a story for the real world?
Oh my gosh, is it ever? And it's a story that's long overdue. You know, whenever I've been to see any women's sports in Britain, it's just empty seats. Mm. I mean, I love the fact that in the show, the way the writers have written our new girls, where they are just accepting of it.
Wait, so hold on. Do you all have to share this room?
Only on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and every other Saturday.
But on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we get to keep our toiletries overnight.
Oh, okay. So there are showers.
There's one shower.
And one toilet.
And a urinal, which I actually prefer to use now.
They don't even really notice anymore that they're just in, like, the visitor's room, that the door has a piece of tape over it that says their name on it. And they're just accepting of that because 'twas ever thus.
You also came up in an industry that has very gendered ideas of what women and men should play and what they should play at different times in our lives, right?
Well, you say that, but musical theatre, we're a very happy gaggle altogether. Yeah, the only thing that I found for the first 10, 12 years of my career, my height.
I wondered.
I think they were, like, frightened of casting me because you're like, whoa, 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 hold on.
Because you're 6'2"?
Well, I'm 6'2 in heels. I'm 5'11".
Oh, I'm 5'10".
Are you?
So I know the struggle.
You know, I just got used to... When I was first setting out, I had a CV or a bio that said 5'10" and one that said 5'11".
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because 5'9" is more palatable and less intimidating than 5'11". And I would kind of stand, like, into my hip and make myself less than.
When did you stop that?
Probably in my mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I would say, well, oh dear, I can't be the same size head as everyone else. I'll have to stand apart then.
Yeah.
You know, I've just turned 52.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 12-year-old daughter. And I'm a single mum, and I think it's really important to absolutely, at this age, very much so, live in my power. And if I can change anything, even in terms of, like, casting, that's no small thing.
I read something you said that really struck me as somebody, I'm just turned 45, and you're kind of thinking, am I going to resist the wrinkles and not age like the world tells us we're not allowed anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I going to be who I am? And I read this quote from you that you said, I want full control of my face because I'm actually more confident, more settled at 52. So why would I want to make myself look like I'm 30 when I wasn't as happy at 30? And I just wondered why you speak so publicly about it, and if you could say more about that feeling.
For me, let me prefix it with for me.
Yeah.
I'm not here to judge anyone else wanting to do anything. But for me, I am an old school theatre girl, and my face is my tool. I love moving people, whether it's to tears of laughter or making them look inwards about something in their own lives. I need my range of movement to do that. And I love the fact that the etchings on my face are my life played out as a canvas. Does anybody like the aging process? Not particularly. Do I like looking at photos that we're not allowed to kind of slightly smooth out a bit? No. But, you know, it is what it is. And what's more important to me is being an actor first, and also for my daughter to see that she doesn't need to start sticking things in her face preemptively, as people do now, in her 20s. I can't speak to it and then not do it myself.
Hannah Waddingham, thank you so much for speaking with me, and congratulations on season 4.
Thank you so much.
Episode 1 of Ted Lasso's 4th season is out now on Apple TV. And a note, Apple is a financial supporter of NPR. This is NPR News.
Boythrob is an unconventional boy band, partly because one member has never physically met his bandmates.
We need 1 million followers for me to get a visa so I can sing and dance in America.
After almost a year of campaigning on social media, Boythrob is bringing its fourth member to the U.S. I'm Elsa Chang, the band's quest for a visa on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Boythrob coming up today on All Things Considered here on People Powered KAXE. Good morning at 6:29. I'm Heidi Holton with Malachi Kunz. We are sitting in a dark studio. It's getting darker and darker here.
It got sort of bright before this, but in a very strange way where it was cloudy and kind of yellow. And we both looked at each other and could tell there was something going on. Did have a warning come in for the Park Rapids area. But yeah, sometimes the NPR stories, they don't really match the ambiance that has been created by the weather outside us here in northern Minnesota.
Boythrob, you mean?
I know. Why'd they have to pick that name? Anyways, no. They're trying their best. That's a conversation for a different day, because we would actually love to hear from you right now about what you're seeing. As you know, we're amateur meteorologists, and there's a kind of a long line of storms that is heading east across Minnesota. There was a warning for the Park Rapids area for severe thunderstorm warning. Sometimes the weather systems that we use, Heidi, they don't actually say a lot. It's been a little confusing this morning. So what you are seeing, let us know. 218-326-1234. Right now it's getting darker, gray, humid, and looking like it's going to be a bit of a stormy morning for at least a stretch here. So
yeah, please let us know what the weather's like where you are. You can text 218-326-1234. I'm going to text Tornado Bob, too, just in case. If he's out on the road, we know something's going on.
That's true.
If he's following the storm.
If he's on something, then that is absolutely going on. So this is the Friday morning show, starting things off with some storms that I did not know were on the way when I went to bed last night. But, should be a nice Friday morning show here today. Of course, it's First Friday, so coming up a little later on, still catching up with some of the events that are going on around the area and around Grand Rapids. And of course, we've got all the fun stuff on the way. Talkbacks, sports page, what's for breakfast. Just a nice old Friday morning on KAXE.
Yeah, it's looking like temperatures today, 76 to 80, but as Malachi said, humid. Southwest winds 5 to 10, gusting up to 20 tonight. Expected clear skies, lows 50 to 54. Tomorrow, Saturday, sunny with highs in the upper 70s to mid 80s and overnight lows in the low 50s to low 60s. And sunny on Sunday, highs 76 to 82. Of course, tomorrow, big day for KEXE, the annual Green Cheese Picnic here at KEXE in Grand Rapids on the banks of the Mississippi. Will be a tent. Bring your own chair, bring a dish to share. You know, maybe it doesn't have to be the best dish you make, but I find that easiest.
That would be a lot of pressure.
To have a standard thing you bring.
Do you want to give yours away right now? Or do you want to keep it?
It's usually a curry.
Okay.
Because I have, you know my easy trick and people think it's fancy.
Yes, you do have a good curry trick.
If it's a main meal, that's what I will do. But otherwise, now that I said that out loud.
Mine's a quinoa salad.
Oh, that's good.
In the summer.
That's good.
For like an outdoor thing.
Yep.
Or some sort of cold summer salad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like a chickpea salad with tomatoes and mint. And
the veggies are coming. We were just, we just got a big tub of veggies from a friend who has a big garden. So all of a sudden it's like, need to be cooking vegetables all the time. And lots of them to get through all the stuff we have. So
I need to eat vegetables. Good idea.
That's what they say.
Yeah. That they're coming, or we need to eat them.
That we need,
I know. It's just one of those, like I had last night. Let's just talk about what we had for dinner, Malachi. I had the night before, I made like a burrito sort of thing, just ground beef and taco, you know, sort of thing with black beans. Nothing. I had guacamole at home and I had a pico.
This sounds like you were getting your vegetables in.
Okay. Does that count? I mean, it felt like I didn't even have any real.
I mean, what is pico, but.
Right.
Tomato, onion, and...
Yeah, you're right. You're
it's
right.
Just tomato and onion.
So we had that in a... I don't usually get at home for a dinner a crunchy taco. I usually get, you know, because it just doesn't seem to work. Well, there was one that looked good when I was at the store. And I was like, that might be fun. Let's have a crunchy one. I mean, the minute we opened it, it was soggy. You know, it just...
What the heck? I don't ever go for crunchy tacos.
Yeah, so I actually threw away the rest. We ate some of them, and I was just there's no way it's going to be worse. I mean, it took the plastic off, and it was just didn't have a crisp.
It was already a soft taco. Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, so...
I wouldn't trust that either.
So that was a couple nights ago, and then last night I just, you know, I was kind of tired, so I just had all of those things, but over tortilla chips.
There you go. A taco salad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Last night. So speaking of vegetables, I had chicken wings.
Oh, speaking of vegetables.
Which isn't that normal for me, but I worked late last night and then didn't want to, and we have one car right now. So we were both in town and it was late and we thought, let's just go get some food.
Okay.
So that's what we did.
All right.
So chicken wings and then, So
were they good?
Did not have a lot of vegetables last night. And sometimes that happens. Normally, I'll be eating more. they were good. They were good.
Okay.
You know, we can maybe pose two questions to people, which is we'd love to hear what the weather is like. Where you at? Is it storming? Is it raining? And also, where's the best chicken wing around?
Oh, there you go.
Because I don't know, you know, I don't know.
I don't eat chicken wings very often.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't either, but like I want them to be good when I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I'm just searching for the perfect Northern Minnesota chicken wing.
Or a recipe if you make them.
Or that too.
Yeah.
But I don't want to make
them. It's already a rollicking Friday morning. We do need your help in terms of weather. So text us at 218-326-1234. Coming up on National Native News, there's a story of how powwows are being held at the Oregon State Correctional Institution in Salem, Oregon. The power of powwow has been described as a collective heartbeat that draws people together. They'll be telling us that story. We'll be bringing you talkbacks and a lot more throughout the Friday morning show.
We receive support from L&M Fleet Supply, carrying a variety of products for your next outdoor adventure with 13 locations across the Northland. More at lmsupply.com.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. The power of a powwow has been described as a collective heartbeat that draws people together. Celebrants often say they feel unity and freedom as they dance in a circle. Those elements are especially vital for those serving time at the Oregon State Correctional Institution in Salem. But as Brian Bull of Underscore Native News and KLCC reports, for one day each year, inmates get to move to the rhythm of a rawhide drum with friends and loved ones. A warning, the story contains mentions of violent crime, suicide, and terminal illness.
A soft breeze rustles the frills on Anthony Salazar's regalia. He describes its colors as his wife Stephanie helps with final adjustments.
Colors of white, black, red, and yellow, which is the colors of the four directions. All the regalia is connected to nature somehow.
Drummers gather in a circle while other dancers fix their bangles and beadwork. A man with a microphone greets the crowd of visitors with a smile.
We're so glad that you guys were able to make it. We are about to prepare to do our grand entry.
At first, you'd think this was just any other powwow getting underway. However,
I'm in here for two counts of murder, and I got life sentence. I've been in 24 years.
Salazar, like everyone else preparing to dance or drum, is a lifer at this medium security all-men's prison. An Apache Indian from San Bernardino, he's thrilled to be part of the powwow and that his wife is here.
This is actually the first powwow where I've actually dressed up in regalia and I'm going to dance.
This is my first one that I've been able to come to. Very fortunate to be here. It means a lot.
As dancers gather for the grand entry, a red-tailed hawk soars above. It's a simple but powerful symbol of freedom in a place where guard towers and checkpoints remind everyone this is a prison. MC Sean Jeffers Monroe says it's great having his wife and other loved ones here once a year.
My mother was dying of cancer 3 years ago, and I was able to have this ceremony with her and these last rites and be able to say goodbye to her. So this is that one time a year that we get to be together as a community, as a family, and kind of be free in a way.
One of the guests for this powwow is Aliza Kaplan, a professor at Lewis and Clark Law School in Portland. She says she and some of her students have been invited to this event about five times.
Because we aim to really get to know our clients and what matters to them and see them as more than people who have committed crimes.
No one here glosses over the fact that they're behind bars for serious crimes and may not ever step foot beyond the prison gates. But many see the powwow as a way to hold on to tradition and find worth, says inmate Nestor Diaz Miller, with the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua.
I've dealt with suicidal thoughts and actions in my past, and being able to focus on this Neepy, on this sweat lodge, and that drum literally saved my life. It's given me something to believe in, something to hope in.
For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull at the Oregon State Correctional Institution in Salem.
The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is advancing several bills aimed at settling tribal water rights and funding water infrastructure across the West. During a legislative hearing last week, senators considered measures affecting the Yavapai Apache Nation of Arizona, the Agua Caliente Band of Cahuilla Indians, and the Pechanga Band of Luiseno Indians in California, along with legislation to strengthen the Federal Indian Water Rights Settlement Completion Fund. Supporters say the bills would help fulfill the federal government's trust responsibilities while providing greater certainty for tribal nations and neighboring communities. The measures now await further action by the committee and Congress. I'm Jill Freitas.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanak Broadcast Corporation with funding in part by the Annenberg Foundation and the Ford Foundation and people like you who are members of KAXE. It's one of the news sources you don't get anywhere else or just everywhere else, and we get a different perspective each and every morning at this time. So thanks so much for being with us. It's 6:40. I'm Heidi Holton. That's Malachi Coons. Again, we need to hear from you weather-wise this morning. We're a little bit baffled. I am, at least. I won't speak on your behalf.
No, I felt the same. Sometimes we're limited to the things you can pull up on the internet about the weather, and then when the sky outside is a certain color and a thing, you get more of a feeling in your bones that sort of contradict it. And then on a radar as well, there is a what appears to be a long line of storms, and we had that EAS. National Weather Service alert go off for the Park Rapids area this morning. So it looks like there's storms, rain around the area. Let us know what are you seeing right now. 218-326-1234. Now it's moved into gray and dark. The yellow light has gone away of that. But still, a moody Friday morning here on the Friday Morning Show.
It's sort of like the changing color of a bruise.
Yes. You know? yeah, it is.
I mean, in reverse order.
Right.
Not exactly. I don't mean it lines up exactly the color, but the changing nature of it, I guess.
Yes, so. I see what you're saying. Because it goes from dark, but then you sometimes get the yellows and.
Yeah.
I know.
Yellow green weirdness.
Yeah, that is weird. I wonder why you get those other colors when you get a good bruise. I got one this winter for the first time in I don't know.
Oh, really?
Since I was running around as a kid.
Okay.
Yeah, you find yourself getting bruised often?
I think it's age, Malachi.
You start to get those.
And maybe I'm clumsy. I get
as Hannah Waddingham was talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They tell the story of your life.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
Although bruises go away. So, but anyways, what was I saying?
You had a bruise this winter.
Oh yeah, I got hit with a hockey stick. I got hit with a hockey stick. And have never played hockey without a mask. And then my mask broke one morning when I got to a hockey, pond hockey tournament.
Okay.
And I thought, yeah, I'm here. Every other person out here is playing without a mask either. Okay. Very first time I do it, I get hit in the face with a stick. So
that's how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I came back. That. Yeah. Yeah. I actually went to the barn dance with a little black eye.
That's right.
Said, hey, don't bump into me during this line dance or otherwise you should see the other guy. No, I didn't say that. Yeah. We're going to be doing our talkbacks in just a little bit. We had lots of comments. Still looking for yours. You can chime in at any time to KEXC 218-326-1234. You can send in emails to comments at KAXE.org. We also take a phone call from time to time. You name it. We love to hear your thoughts on everything that we do here at this station. And again, as Heidi said, thank you for supporting us at our member drive last week. Thank you to everyone who contributed and who has continued to contribute. You can do that anytime at kaxe.org.
It is time for the talkback segment where you listen to your calls, your messages on SpeakPipe, and your texts that come in. You can always email us comments at kexe.org, and the text line is 218-326-1234.
We heard from DJ Elizabeth, who was tuning in to Doug Danger's show last week and said, "This on the river is the best I've ever heard. So many awesome songs. I took the long way home in the car just to listen longer. And now that I'm home, I'm streaming with earbuds. I also plan to replay some of these songs on my next show." Dang. Doug Danger, killing it.
Yeah.
Great job, she said.
We got a lot of comments from people who donated last weekend, including Karen from Grand Rapids, who said, "I believe in KEXE and what you have done for so long. Love the music."
We had Tom from Creskill, New Jersey, who I really enjoyed hearing this one, contributed during our member drive and said, "I'm not exactly sure how I found KEXE, perhaps the band Low, but I love the vibe and the music. Keep fighting the good fight." You love when that happens. Yeah, yeah. A fan from New Jersey. And, you know, I was thinking maybe Kari did a conversation with Alan that was very moving a few years ago. And we've covered Low for a while, so you can see how a fan of a band like that might tap in. And then the cool thing is that stuck around.
That's right. Steph and John from Sudbury, Ontario said, "Thanks for all the work you guys do. We love all of the great programming and especially look forward to Green Cheese." Now, Malachi, you were saying you like these guys, right?
Whenever I tune into Green Cheese, John from Sudbury gets through and he gets the answer right. And maybe Steph's probably helping too. And they always say really nice things about KEXE. It actually warms my heart. Even though I know that much of Canada is much closer to us than much of the United States. Like when someone from another country is like, "You're doing a good job." You just feel like, "Hey, thanks, brother."
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know where Sudbury is, to be honest.
I don't either.
So sorry about that. But somewhere outside of Toronto and the greater Ontario area is what I'm guessing. Or maybe it's up by Thunder Bay. Anyways, not important. Beaver Islanders on Green Cheese said, "Thank you so much for your commitment to community for the rest of us in the beautiful state of Minnesota and beyond."
Mm. Doug from Egan enjoyed DJ DeMurph's On the River show on Wednesday night. "Sweet playlist. Thanks for Summertime Thing by Chuck Prophet. Love the old Jay Giles, too. Thanks for the great radio."
I got a Jay Giles LP from my uncle. When I first started my record collection, my uncle was like, "You can have all of mine."
Wow.
And there was a Jay Giles in there.
Huh.
And I still have it.
Was Jay Giles' band?
It was the Jay Giles' band, I guess.
Okay.
Did he do solo stuff too?
I have no idea. That's a very roller skating memory for me, skating to the Jay Giles' band.
Because he did the Angel is a Centerfold, right? That's your big hit? Okay. "Our question of the week has been about your favorite ways to eat berries. Many have said they like to eat them as they pick them, myself included, but Dawn and Baxter said fresh wild blueberry, no bake pie is how I like my wild berries."
Huh. Nice.
So... what?
So it's chilled, probably. It's more like a cheesecake, right? It sets. Just no bake, right?
But there's a crust that's been baked in there, right?
Yeah, it could be like a graham cracker or something, right?
All right.
I think. I had a friend, I'm looking quickly here, that shared a recipe after she picked raspberries at my house. She had made this... thing. They use the New York Times cooking app a lot, which I do too. It's got a lot of good stuff there. She did this very simple thing, just berries and cream. Looks like this.
Oh, nice. Like a...
So just basically...
Oh, that was delightful.
Yeah, basically just a kind of a pudding. Got heavy cream, but in full fat yogurt and some vanilla.
Okay. That could be my next way to do some fresh berries.
It's hard
to even get them home and, without... without digging in. And then one more comment I saw that just came in last night.
Mm-hmm.
Joan from Side Lake was listening to DJ Lake Poseidon's On the River and sent in a comment. "What a beautiful song." And I'm not sure exactly what song it was, but thank you for sending that one in, Joan. And always our On the River host, picking beautiful songs in beautiful ways. After I got done with work and after I got done eating chicken wings, I caught the end of DJ Lake Poseidon's, like, the last little bit, and it was awesome. He played a Cure song.
Oh, nice.
And then he played a Janis Joplin song, and then he played the theme to the Beverly Hillbillies just right in a row. And I was like, "Oh man, this is what it's all about."
Yeah. Oh, there's just been some lately. There's been music that's been mentioned. I was reading a book and it mentioned
the band Yaz, which I really liked when I was in college, but they called it Yazoo. And I was like, that's wrong. Like, I was ready to, like, get a hold of the publisher, but it turned out Yazoo was what it was called in Britain, and Yaz is what it was called here.
Okay.
So Upstairs at Eric's, that was the seminal Yaz album of the time, so.
Upstairs at Eric.
Uh-huh. Wait.
Okay.
Y-A-Z.
This is Allison. Wait, no. Okay, yeah. This is what I'm thinking of. Got it.
Yeah.
I think I know them more as Yazoo. I don't know why.
Oh, okay.
But see, I don't know that much about them.
Okay.
Upstairs at Eric's house.
So but stuff has been popping up in, like, things I'm reading or watching. I'm on the bandwagon, thanks to the Crab family, of rewatching the Gilmore Girls, right?
Yes.
And last night, the episode I saw, this is sounding quaint, but there's always an edge on Gilmore, a little bit of an edge. They had a snowman contest or snow, you know, person contest right in the main thing, and Lorelai and Rory did main Bjork. That was who they did. And so then the end of the show is them driving around the circle and a Bjork song playing. Even though normally, you know, you'd be hearing Christmas ding ding ding, you know, and it was very cool. That's why that's a cool show.
Yeah, it definitely has a life like beyond the story. It has this musical aspect that runs through it, because whenever I've seen episodes, it's always what I've caught on to. And I always see this, like, this clip will go around the internet of who's like he's like her stepdad, but he's not, you know, he owns the cafe or something.
Luke,
where, like, Luke's ranting about Pink Moon being in a car commercial. That clip always pops up on the internet for me. And he's...
Oh, okay. That's Luke's not into music. Who is that? Probably Jet. Maybe it is. Yeah. Maybe,
you know, he's a scruffy guy.
Yeah, it's Luke.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I swear it's Luke, and it's like when Pink Moon by Nick Drake was used in some, like, car commercial, and mm-hmm. he's, you know, it's a bit about how it's lost its thing, and yeah.
Well, there's a big thing, Rory's best friend, Lane, who's super into all music, but she's Korean and her family is very religious, so she's not even allowed to have pop music. She's got all these hidden floorboards in her room, so it's a big storyline. Is she's always sneaking, and then you see all the music that she's got.
She got them stashed, like, under the floor.
Uh-huh. It's a very fun thing.
Okay.
Music means a lot. Hey, we've been asking about weather. We just heard from Sarah Bignall. She says some giant rumble. So this is in the Grand Rapids area, of thunder, and it's humid on the walk this morning. Has progressively gotten darker as we walk.
Yeah, my windshield was just, that should have been my first clue. My windshield was just kept fogging up when I was driving in.
Yeah.
That it was heavy humid. And again, looking for your reports as well, 218-326-1234. Looking a little bit like the calm before maybe some rain, and Sarah's hearing thunder in our area. Had a severe storm warning earlier today in the Park Rapids area, still going on until 7 a.m., I believe, and haven't seen any new ones come in around the region. But you can let us know what you're seeing. To 218-326-1234.
Coming up, we'll have the set list with Malachi, but first we'd like to thank Lake Country Journal, a magazine showcasing the beauty, landscapes, and people of Lake Country. The February-March issue publishes the winners of the annual photo contest, which are also displayed at the Brainerd Lakes Regional Airport. Submissions accepted all year round at lakecountryjournal.com.
Again, right now, hanging out in the mid-60s today, our forecast. After this little stretch rolls through, partly sunny today, highs in the upper 70s around the area. Another cool one tonight, which it's been nice to actually cool the house down with the windows open. Into the low 50s again this evening. Tomorrow, sunny, highs in the upper 70s. Sunday, highs again around 80. So looking like a beautiful, not too hot weekend on the way for us.
Coming up after 8 o'clock, we'll bring you the sports page. The big news was the Lynx loss last night to the LA Sparks. And I fell asleep, woke up to watching, went back and watched a little bit of the end of it. And boy, that was heartbreaking.
So.
And the coach.
They had won 10 games before that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was a close game, but coach was not happy. But we'll get to that later on the Friday morning show. And then at 9 o'clock, Jennifer Barr is your host for Headwaters and Malachi back for Minnesota Mixtape.
This is The Set List on KAXE, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are featuring four shows this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 7th through the 9th, in Big Fork, Grand Rapids, Bemidji, and Virginia. Starting things off with the Bugle Boys at the Trailside Restaurant and Bar in Big Fork, Friday at 6 p.m. They are a folk blues duo of Clay Fulton and Nick Novotny, who also play together in Clay Fulton and the Lost 40, with a washboard and stomping blues sound. Friday night at the Trailside in Big Fork. The Oxbows are playing Bemidji Brewing at 6 p.m. Saturday for the brewery's Sunset Sounds music series. They are a bluegrass and folk trio of Eric Carlson, Erica Mork, and Dan Schnackenberg. Also at 6 p.m. Saturday, five bands are playing Clocko Brewing in Grand Rapids. Cars for Skids, a Cars cover band, plus Battery Eyes, Underground Till Sundown, Flintlock, and the Anchor Windlass, playing post-hardcore, melodic, and 90s punk. It is this Saturday at Clocko Brewing in Grand Rapids. And on to Sunday, Superior Siren are playing in Virginia at the Mesabi Unitarian Universalist Church at 5 p.m. The Duluth Quartets are led by the special voice of songwriter Laura Sellner, playing an eerie style of chamber folk with cello, violin, bass, drums, and guitar. Their sound is equally haunting and warm. Superior Siren this Sunday in Virginia. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and we'll post the latest edition every Wednesday at kaxc.org.
.655 coming up, we'll bring you our album of the week, and then it is local news on the Up North Report.
There are a few more shows as well. Can't fit them all on the set list, but just looking around the area tonight for some additional things. Morning Bird will be on Smoke on the Water in Coleraine. It is First Friday, so Sam Milthich and friends at Rapids Brewing. We'll get an update at that towards the end of our morning show today. Katie Marshall going to join us to talk First Friday. And then Corey Medina and brothers are at the Rail River Folk School in Bemidji at 7 p.m. So lots going on beyond the set list as well. You can find more and check back in on those at kaxe.org. Thank you for tuning in this Friday morning. Again, our question of the week, what are your favorite ways to eat wild berries? Heard about no-bake pies. Most people, myself included, have been saying just eat them right off the vine when they're hot in the sun.
Yeah.
Whatever it might be, we're still having, do you still have a fair amount of berries? We've got a good, I'm eating raspberries like every day.
Oh, okay. Raspberries are done at our house. We seem to be early on those. There's some of the wild ones that have cropped up that are still out there, but very small. I ended up just doing pancakes with the blueberries I picked and then froze the berries. So we've had them on ice cream and in oatmeal. And I was going to make blueberry muffins. But I was like, I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to waste them in muffins. I think, you know.
Yeah, because once you're that, like, you have them, then you can start to think about wasting them on certain things.
Yeah.
Pancakes are the way to go.
I mean, wasting is not a great way to put it, but maybe I'm just not a blueberry muffin. I don't dislike
them. You
hate
muffins.
No. No, but I think at home, and you know, with just two of us, we probably wouldn't eat all of them either would be the thing. I mean, we could freeze them, but.
What is a pancake if not a flat muffin?
Yeah, I know.
When you really think about it.
But I always put, you know, you always get syrup and whipped cream on a pancake is what happens at our house.
That's true.
And you don't tend to do that on a blueberry muffin. So I just answered my own question.
There you go. Yeah. I made pancakes last weekend. But I've been really into these thin pancakes lately.
Mm.
Thin, and there's not enough body to like fit a blueberry into it.
Oh, sure.
And I've been on that trend for a little while. But the last time I did that, I was like, maybe it's time to go back to a fluffy one. So that I can fit a berry inside there and have it like turn out well.
I think I'm finally cracking the code. I've notoriously been the worst pancake maker.
Notoriously been the worst?
Mm-hmm. How,
like, is it your batter or your cooking technique?
Each time, all the things. It's very, something different every time. Sort of like the coffee pot here, Malachi. Like you think you remember to push it all the way in and then whoops, you put too much of this and it'll overflow. You know, like you think you're remembering every element that can go wrong.
It's 5:45, you know?
Yeah.
Give yourself a break.
So I'm making a fluff. And I think it comes from, I used to love a thin pancake that my grandmother made. And so I was always trying to recreate that where the other member of the household wanted a big fluffy one, right? And so anyway, the letting it sit, the batter is what has made it
work so much better.
Okay.
And of course, not overbeating it. Then it, you know, even if there's lumps, it's okay. And I have to do small ones. I'm not good at flipping a big pancake. I don't have the skills. It ends up folding.
Are you flipping with a spatula?
Mm-hmm.
You could go for the, you know?
Yeah.
And get that full flip going?
I'm glad you think I could have that move, but I don't have that move, that's for sure.
I've been making these these very thin ones that I got from a friend, kind of was at their house, and they had this little like piece of paper, written recipe, kind of permanently like taped on the wall in the kitchen area.
Nice.
And I took a photo of it, and that's the one I make now lately for a while, and I've been very into it, so... Thank you, Lori, for that one. It has some crossed out directions, like don't put that much sugar in, put this much.
Yeah.
And it's one of those situations where, and then it just turned out great.
Huh. Do you ever do a Dutch baby? That's an oven pancake?
I think you said this to me before. No.
It's really interesting. Yeah, that's kind of good too.
Is it in a Dutch oven?